Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate.
Kia ora and welcome to our Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation, and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our center, our programs, or about social justice. Today, my visitor is Matt Halsey. Matt, a warm welcome to our radio program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
Matt is a lawyer, and he says he has a profound love for social and community development. He worked 15 years in international development in New Zealand and overseas for NGOs, UN development programs, and New Zealand government. He was involved in microfinance in Bangladesh and now in New Zealand. Currently, he works as project manager microfinance for the Good Shepherd Sisters in New Zealand. Matt, you are a lawyer and you say that you have a profound love for social and community development. What is the source of this love?
I think right at the heart of it is I believe that everyone has a right to a decent and full life. But also importantly, everyone has a certain unique gift to bring to the world. And if you are not able to use that gift because you're disadvantaged or you're poor or you're living in poverty, then the world doesn't get the benefit of that. And you don't get the benefit of that for your family, your community. So
it's about using talents and gifts.
Indeed, and making the most of what we've got in the world.
And Muhammad Yunus, the Bangladeshi banker who was awarded the Nobel Prize in 2006 for his approach in microfinance, he drew the world's attention first to microfinance. Can you give us examples of what the impact of this Nobel Prize has been?
I think microfinance was well known in South Asia and in the international development community itself, reasonably well known up till that point. But I think the prize that he got really drew the world's spotlight onto microfinance and seeing how it could change lives. It also showed community and governments that it doesn't take a huge amount of money to make a huge change in people's lives. So some of the work that we are doing now, which we'll talk about soon, goes back to that, goes back to the world getting a better understanding of the opportunities microfinance was able to provide.
It's interesting that it was Bangladesh that drew the attention to it.
Indeed.
And you worked in Bangladesh.
I did. I spent a few years working on some microfinance projects there that were working with people affected by leprosy, but giving them the access, just really small amounts of money. You know, it may have only been 20 New Zealand dollars or 50 New Zealand dollars, but in that environment, when you have very, very little, it can make such a huge difference in your life. For example, setting up a tea shop, buying, just having the resources to go out and buy some tea, buy a pot, buy a stove to cook the tea on in a few cups. You can do that with $20-$30, but if you don't have that ability to go and buy that, you can't start your business. I mean, it's sort of self-evident, but you kind of have to see it to really understand the impact of such small amounts of money for people.
You said leprosy?
Yeah, so in a previous role, I worked for Leprosy Mission, who were focusing primarily on people affected by leprosy and supporting them in a number of ways, including establishing themselves economically. So the projects were focused on them, but also bringing in a lot of other disadvantaged people in those communities.
For those of you who've just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk. Or send me an email at muffintalk840@gmail.com. My visitor today is Matt Halsey. He is a lawyer by training and is currently the project manager microfinance for the Good Shepherd Sisters in New Zealand. He has explained where his passion for social justice comes from and how he got involved with microfinance and a little bit of what he did in Bangladesh. Matt, microfinance for me has been a way or was to support poor people to invest in building up their own business. You gave an example of a tea shop, for example. But I understand that there are different definitions of microfinance. Can you please tell us what microfinance means for you?
You're right, there are a number of definitions, but the main thing is microfinance is about providing financial services for people who don't have access to these. So it could be a range of things, but it's about, so it could be saving, the ability to have a savings account or save money somehow. It could be about actually borrowing money, and that's the most common or the commonly understood area of microfinance. And it could be about insurance. So it's any range of financial services that people don't have access to. And generally it's people living on the lower end of the economic spectrum.
So when you say saving, does that mean that money is given to others for saving money?
No, it gives perhaps encouraging people, working with people to actually start saving or giving people the ability to save. So, for example, in Bangladesh, having access to a savings account and is something people may not have easy access to. In New Zealand, it's relatively simple. But also getting together with a group of people and supporting each other emotionally and socially to actually get into the practice of saving. And often that feeds into borrowing. So you set up a habit of saving, and then once people have saved for a while, they've shown that they can keep aside a little bit of their money that they get each week, and then with that money they show that they're able to then repay a loan, and then often in a loan scheme they would then transition into getting lent money through microfinance.
So they would learn also how to deal with money and what to do with money in long term.
Indeed.
And not just short term to buy something quickly, but to know that, for example, if you want to set up a business, you'd have to have a business plan or a budget.
Indeed.
Would you help with that?
Indeed. And so a lot of the microfinance schemes that are happening in the developing world have a big focus around that, is getting groups of people together to give each other ideas and encourage them, and often to train people in developing a business plan or developing a savings plan or getting an understanding of their finances. And what happens in New Zealand is similar to that, and which I think we'll discuss a little bit later. But it's really about financial exclusion. So going back to the definition of microfinance, it's about financial exclusion. It's providing financial services and financial opportunities to people to have tools to engage fully in society, economically and socially. So financial exclusion, it's a bit of a technical term, but it's defined as having access to a transaction account, what we used to call a check account, a small line of credit and general insurance. And if you don't have those three things in New Zealand or in the developing world, then you are financially excluded. You're excluded from the mainstream of financial access, financial inclusion. And if you don't have access to all those three things, and in Australia it's about 17% of the adult population don't have access to all three of those things, then you're not necessarily well prepared for life's surprises, and it leaves you really vulnerable to expensive borrowing and unfair lending practices and being caught in that cycle of financial exclusion.
Some months ago I interviewed a guest who was speaking about interest rates that were horrendous. They were like 400% or even more for people who just did not have enough money. So especially exactly what you said, they were excluded from the mainstream market, and then they were bound to money lenders who gave them money but asked for so much interest. So that's something that you're also approaching with your work, that you don't want people to be victims of these kind of money lenders.
We want to give people an alternative to that, because in New Zealand, getting access to credit is actually very, very easy. But the people I'm talking about being excluded are excluded from mainstream credit. So credit through banks and other, those first tier, lenders who don't tend to charge such high rates and are very ethical, a lot more ethical in the way that they lend and behave towards borrowers. So for those people who are excluded from that, they are really prey to high interest rates and a lot of predatory lenders out there in the market, and do end up in situations where not only are they paying really high interest rates, they're also being charged high fees, and they're being charged penalty fees if they miss a payment and so forth. So the microfinance that our organisation works in is providing an alternative to that.
Because I know from developing countries, like in Latin America, I've heard of some examples, and there were people who had nothing, but they had an idea. They wanted to do a little business, even if it was just making tortillas, and they need an oven and the flour and the ingredients. So their first money was given to them as microfinance, and then they would build up and sell their tortillas, and after a while they would buy a second oven or things like that.
Indeed.
So that's a microfinance, and I'm wondering, does that work in New Zealand, so, that kind of scheme?
So in New Zealand, there are people providing microfinance for business purposes, business startup, for training to get people into new jobs or into businesses. But what we're involved in, and what a lot of microfinance is about in New Zealand, is providing people with access to fair, safe, affordable credit to buy just basic household essentials or basic essential household services, the things that people need in their life. So, and to enable families to excuse me, I've got it now too, to participate fully in life. So it might be a fridge or a washing machine, or in New Zealand and in lots of parts of New Zealand, a car, to be able to get to work, to earn a living, but also just to be able to take kids to do fun things, or families to do fun things, you know, to going along to sport. And, you know, I would say that in New Zealand, for many people, having a car is really an essential for full social engagement. And that's difficult because cars are expensive.
You work for the Good Shepherd Sisters in New Zealand, the Congregation of Sisters of the Good Shepherd. And this congregation was founded almost the same time as the Sisters of Mercy. But whereas Catherine McCauley lived in Ireland, the Good Shepherd Sisters were founded in France. However, both congregations put their focus on the support of girls and women. Is that right?
Indeed, indeed. That is the focus of the Sisters of the Good Shepherd.
So how come that they are in microfinance? They don't give the finance only to the girls and women, do they?
And yeah, so we're in New Zealand. The Good Shepherd Sisters are a network around the world. We're part of the Australia-New Zealand network. And so in New Zealand, we focus on a number of different activities. They don't. There's an interesting story behind this one. The Good Shepherd Sisters in Australia, 34 years ago in Melbourne, they were working with women and girls there who were down on their luck. And one day they were having a discussion with someone and realized that actually a great way to assist some of the people they were working with would be to provide them with a small loan. And they realized this could make a real difference in their lives. And what was interesting is that everyone advising the sisters said, don't do this, you'll never see the money again. And pretty much every cent that was loaned out in those initial loans came back, and that has been the experience since then. 97% repayment rate on the no-interest loan scheme in Australia. They started off with an initial investment of $20,000, and it's grown to where in Australia now there's 600 different locations offering these no-interest or NILS loans. And now in New Zealand we've got 4 locations providing those loans. So it started off as a way to support women and girls, and it is where the sisters continue to see it as that, because if people are living in healthy, happy homes, that is good for women and girls, is what it really comes down to.
And so you still already gave us some examples of what you could buy with the loans that were given to you. So like a car or a washing machine or something like that. So you have a committee or a group that decides on this is essential or this is just, do you also supply? Somebody has a lot of debts, and I think one of the examples that was mentioned at one of the events about responsible lending was that people, especially when they come from a culture where like weddings and other family celebrations are very costly, and but the people need to invest money in it, that they had a problem getting the money, and they were the ones who were very much in danger of having to pay a high interest rate.
Yeah, there's in New Zealand we're delivering, or we're working with two loan products. There's the no interest loan scheme, NILS, and there's step up loans. Both are similar, but there's different. They're slightly different in some ways. But to answer your question, there is a specified list of products that or things that the loans can be taken for, and they're generally household essentials. So funding a wedding is something that would be outside of that. But funerals, for example, basic funeral costs are covered. So it's about what are the essentials in life. So resources for school, books, computers, things like that are essential. Basic household appliances like fridges and washing machines, things that can make a real difference in your life are included in that. You can't borrow money as cash. We will actually transfer the money to a supplier rather than actually provide cash. We do not provide debt consolidation loans, although they are available in New Zealand through Ngā Tangata, which is a small loan provider based out of here in Auckland. The NILS loans, so there is a guideline around what you can and cannot borrow for, and that's very transparently available. But the ultimate decision for the NILS loans are made by committees within the organisations that are operating their NILS programs under the Good Shepherd model. So they actually make the final decision on one, who is willing and able to repay the loan. They'll have a look at people's budgets and see that they can actually afford to make the repayments. But they will also make a decision about the loan purpose as well.
What happens if somebody cannot afford to repay?
If someone can't afford to repay, the loan workers who work for the community organisations who are implementing the loans at the front line, those workers will work with the borrower to facilitate repayment. So if they need to renegotiate the repayment rate because their circumstances have changed, they'll work with them on that. Or if they need a break, something big's happened in their life, you know, they've lost a job or a family member's got ill, then they might take a break from making repayments. So it's all about working alongside someone to facilitate them repaying.
So that's part of the support that you give to him. It's to him or her.
It is. And the workers, are, you know, we're all about providing loans to people who need those loans and who it is economically, financially the right thing for them to do. But also it's about taking people on a financial journey, a journey of learning. And that goes right from the start when you inquire about taking out a loan. You get in touch with a community service provider. So at the moment in Auckland, there are three providers providing NILS loans. One is Ngā Tangata. There's two sites in Auckland through the Salvation Army providing these NILS loans. One in Waitakere at the Salvation Army Centre there, and one in Manukau at their centre, Salvation Army Centre there. Right from the start when they ring up and inquire about a loan, right through the full loan interview, which takes up to an hour and a half, once the loan is actually issued, approved or declined, right through till it's fully repaid, the community finance worker or the loan worker will actually work with people to develop their understanding of their financial situation, to develop their understanding of what it means to borrow money, what the implications of that are, what the dangers are, what the other financial issues are involved. So, for example, if you buy a car and you don't have simple car insurance, you're opening yourself up to another huge financial problem if you crash that car. So talking about insurance with people. So it's part of a long journey. And if so, it's developing, having a discussion with people about their financial situation, adding to their knowledge, building on their interest in discussing their finances, because a lot of people, you know, they don't want to have to think about the financial pressures they're under. But coming to a loan interview does give you that. You need to be able to discuss your financial position. You need to convince the loan worker, or rather work with the loan worker to show that you can afford to repay safely and reliably repay that loan. So people are really engaged in that. And often for people, that's a huge learning experience.
How much is the amount that's the most frequent, not the average, but the most frequent? Is it because you were mentioning examples in Bangladesh, which you cannot transfer to New Zealand. Mm-hmm. So what would be in?
So the NILS loans that the Salvation Army are operating or issuing are up to $1,000 through Ngā Tangata and through Aviva, which is formerly the Christchurch Women's Refuge in Christchurch. They offer slightly larger amounts because they operate in a slightly they operate within a slightly different they offer slightly different services. So Ngā Tangata is very strongly linked into budgeting, and Aviva is linked into domestic violence, family violence. So Aviva will issue loans of up to $2,000. But so they're between $1,000 and $2,000. And we generally find, you know, people will take out a loan in that for between $800 and $1,500. The step-up loans are a different product again, and they are available just through the Salvation Army at this point. From $1,000 to $5,000. And I think the average borrowing under those is about $3,500, slightly more for cars. So you could imagine for the step-up loan, you can actually get a reasonable car for less than $5,000. So I think currently the average car price is about, that borrow, people are borrowing for, is about $3,800.
Mm-hmm. And where does the money come from?
So the money comes from commercial banks in New Zealand. NILS funding, or not NILS funding, rather NILS loan capital is coming from Kiwi Bank and from the Bank of New Zealand. So the community provider who employs the workers gets a loan operating fund that they can then lend out to people under their own decision-making processes. And the step-up loans are actually issued directly by the BNZ. So that's a jointly owned product between Good Shepherd and the Bank of New Zealand. So they use their own loan capital. For step-up, it's at a relatively low interest rate. And the BNZ funds that themselves.
Do you have any success stories?
Oh, I do have a number of success stories. And the interesting thing is there's success stories from people who do borrow money, and there's success stories from people who decide not to or are unable to borrow money. So we've actually had our first loan repay just in the last couple of weeks. And the person who borrowed that money borrowed some money to, originally they were going to buy a car, and in discussion with the loan worker, they ended up borrowing the money to repair their existing car. And they needed a car to look after the kids, and that family really worked hard to ensure that they could make those repayments and were able to get their car back on the road and reliably on the road. And so the woman who borrowed this money is pretty chuffed, I think, that she's managed to repay it. And in fact, she repaid it quicker than she even needed to, because she had the ability, she had the opportunity to repay it quicker. So, she did. I also had an interesting experience with a woman who I actually interviewed when I was training one of the workers, and she came in wanting to buy a car for her. She had one or two little kids, and we had a big discussion about this, and we went through her budget and understood how much she received and how much she spent a week and how much money she had left over. And at the end of it, she said to me, "I don't think I want to buy a car, actually, I've realized that actually this is not actually a priority for our family. We could probably just afford it, but actually we can probably make do catching the bus, and we need that little bit of extra money for the nice things I do with the kids. So it was great, and she left happy. She came in for a loan, she didn't get a loan, and she left with a big smile on her face saying, great, you've helped me think this through a bit.
That's good. That's a very positive. You do creating awareness, you educate, and you support. And you don't only support once, but you help people on the journey.
Indeed.
To repay, and in the future, once they get on their feet, and they might be able to save more money with a new job or with a steady income, and then in the future they won't have to come anymore.
Indeed. And we see it as a bit of a progression through the loan. So the NILS loans are relatively small. They're very cheap. There's absolutely no interest charged on them, no other fees. So you can come and get one of those loans, and you can, once you've repaid it, you can come back and get another one. Or you can move up to a bigger loan through Step Up. And Step Up are called Step Up because it's seen as a step up into the formal financial system. So hopefully once you've built up your family asset base a little bit, you've learnt some more financial skills, you've had some more financial experience, you're able to step out of financial exclusion and into mainstream banking.
You must have a long waiting list. Okay, thank you very much, Matt, for this interview. It's been a pleasure to have you here. And to our listeners, what is coming up in our Mercy Spirituality Center? Tomorrow on Saturday, the 16th of May, Sister Catherine Wilds Pickard will offer a retreat day on Christian meditation. And next week, we are going to have two events that bring us closer to Maori customs. On Wednesday, 20th of May, Pani Chamberlain is going to talk about the roots of some Maori customs. And then from 7 to 9 p.m., that will be from 7 to 9 p.m. on the 20th of May. And on Saturday, the 23rd of May, Manuel Beasley will give us a guide through the Otara Marae. You're welcome to join, but please register with us. On the 13th of June, we're going to have Sister Gemma Simmons with us. She is from the United Kingdom and is currently visiting New Zealand schools. She will facilitate a workshop on the topic, Mary Misunderstood? For all events at our center, please register with us at 09 for Auckland, 638-6238. But you can also register through our website, www.mercyspiritualitycentre.org.nz. For any questions or feedback on the Muffin Talks, you can also send me an email at muffintalk840@gmail.com. I wish you all a blessed Friday and a good week ahead. Thank you, Matt, for coming again.
Thank you.